markets, could other banks do it too? But maybe the strangest aspect of the case was how difficult it appeared to be, for the few who attempted, to explain what the Russian had done. I don't mean only what he had done wrong. I mean what he had done. His job. He was usually described as a high-frequency trading programmer, but that wasn't an explanation. That was a term of art that in the summer of 2009, most people, even on Wall Street, had never before heard. What was high-frequency trading? Why was the code that enabled Goldman Sachs to do it so important that when it was discovered to have been copied by some employee, Goldman Sachs needed to call the FBI? If this code was at once so incredibly valuable and so dangerous to financial markets, how did a Russian who had worked for Goldman Sachs for a mere 2 years get his hands on it? At some point, I went looking for someone who might answer those questions. My search ended in a room looking out at the World Trade Center site at 1 Liberty Plaza. In this room were gathered a small army of shockingly well-informed people from every corner of Wall Street, big banks, the major stock exchanges, and high-frequency trading firms. Many of them had left high-paying jobs to declare war on Wall Street, which meant, among other things, attacking the very problem that the Russian computer programmer had been hired by Goldman Sachs to create. In the bargain, they had become experts on the questions I sought answers to, along with a lot of other questions I hadn't thought to ask. These, it turned out, were far more interesting than I expected them to be. I didn't start out with much interest in the stock market, though like most people, I enjoy watching it go boom and crash. When it crashed on October 19, 1987, I happened to be hovering around the 40th floor of 1 New York Plaza, the stock market trading and sales department of my then-employer, Salomon Brothers. That was interesting. If you ever needed proof that even Wall Street insiders have no idea what's going to happen next on Wall Street, there it was. One moment, all is well. The next, the value of the entire U.S. stock market has fallen 22.61%, and no one knows why. During the crash, some Wall Street brokers, to avoid the orders their customers wanted to place to sell stocks, simply declined to pick up their phones. It wasn't the first time that Wall Street people had discredited themselves, but this time the authorities responded by changing the rules, making it easier for computers to do the jobs done by those imperfect people. The 1987 stock market crash set in motion a process, weak at first, stronger over the years, that has ended with computers entirely replacing the people. Over the past decade, the financial markets have changed too rapidly for our mental picture of them to remain true to life. The picture I'll bet most people have of the markets is still a picture a human being might have taken. In it, a ticker tape runs across the bottom of some cable TV screen, and alpha males in color-coded jackets stand in trading pits hollering at each other. That picture is dated. The world it depicts is dead. Since about 2007, there have been no thick-necked guys in color-coded jackets standing in trading pits, or if they are, they're pointless. There are still some human beings working on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange and the various Chicago exchanges, but they no longer preside over any financial market or have a privileged view inside those markets. The U.S. stock market now trades inside black boxes in heavily guarded buildings in New Jersey and Chicago. What goes on inside those black boxes is hard to say. The ticker tape that runs across the bottom of cable TV screens captures only the tiniest fraction of what occurs in the stock markets. The public reports